What do you get when three comic and entertainment enthusiasts join together to discuss the topics that interest us all? Something that is truly larger than life. What's on the page?
On the screen.
And on our minds. Is front and center here on Larger Than Life with Dan Totora and co-hosts TJ Yeldon and Brian Yeldon.
Welcome here to Larger Than Life with Dan Tortora on largerthanlifedt.com and on the app largerthanlifedt.podbean.com/mobile. That's largerthanlifedt.podbean.com/mobile. Happy to be sharing with you today my conversation with Phil Lamar, who has lent his voice to many characters in the world that we know and love, these comic book characters that have jumped off the pages and onto TV screens and into movies now. Well, when you look at those stories and those characters, when you see the animated features and that voice brings them alive, Phil Lamar has done so much and brought so many of those characters to life for us. And also someone who was a regular on Mad TV. You see him on TV commercials currently. Phil Lamar has done so much work and good work in this country and to this world, and I cannot thank him enough to share this conversation with you from my time with Phil Lamar, somebody who appreciates the art, appreciates good quality people, and appreciates the world that we can create just by lending our voice to something. So I'm very happy to be sharing with you his voice right now in my conversation with Phil Lamar.
Well, Phil, you know, obviously with all the roles that you've been able to do, all the characters you've been able to bring to life, do you remember the first one that you had an opportunity to do, first character you got to voice?
Yeah, actually, because my first voiceover job was when I was in high school. I did a character named Woody on the Mr. T cartoon. It was on Saturday mornings on Channel 4 on NBC way, way back in the day.
Yeah. When you think about that role, what does it mean to you now, knowing that, you know, that first opportunity that you had to voice something has brought you, obviously, to where you stand today? What can you say about remembering back?
What I remember most is how bad it was. And I thank heaven that I've gotten better since then.
Who do you pull from? Did you have any mentors or anybody that you kind of looked up to that you tried to pull from or mimic growing up that you feel like you've utilized today?
That's a good question. I mean, for me, voice acting is just another kind of performance. Yeah. Whether the same way I do plays or parts on TV shows or movies, it's all the same job with just little technical differences. Although I'd say the people that I draw from and inspired by, some of them are live action and some of them are, yeah, I mean, one of my favorite actors is Bugs Bunny, which is a weird thing to say because Bugs Bunny is not a person. Bugs Bunny is a collaboration.
Yeah.
But that's, it all is, you know, acting on a movie set without the lighting, Keanu Reeves is invisible and you can't see whether he's any good. So we're all working with other people, and voice acting is just a little more broken down, you know, because it's just your voice and people can focus on that. Yeah, it's Sidney Poitier, Tom Hanks, and Bugs Bunny. Those are, if I could combine and distill what they have and have those three careers combined into one, that would be my dream.
What do each of those three bring to the table that they're the three that you chose out of anybody?
Versatility, kindness, a sense of significance, you know, and lightness, all in one package, you know.
So looking at all the characters and kind of all going off of the experience that you just had, how often do people see you in the streets and scream something out?
Not that often. Sort of depends. I mean, obviously, here, this is a context where, you know, these are the people who recognize this work. But, yeah, out on the street, not really that often, unless Pulp Fiction is rerunning that week on HBO or something.
When you look at all the roles that you've done live action-wise, you know, been on the set, do you have a favorite? Do you have one that you look back on and really appreciate? I mean, obviously you appreciate all the roles, but any of them that stick out to you?
Well, I mean, I have a bunch that stick out. I've been very fortunate to work with amazingly creative people. I mean, you know, Quentin Tarantino on Pulp Fiction. I did a very, very small part on Spider-Man 2 under Sam Raimi, which was fantastic, just as, also as a comic book fan. You know, Bruce Timm and Dre Romano on Justice League, Matt Groening and David Cohen on Futurama. I've worked with geniuses. You know, I did the Pee Wee Herman show on Broadway. I mean, Paul Rubens is basically like a human Mickey Mouse, you know, and watching him craft a show. So, I mean, I have a lot of favorites. You know, I mean, I've been a Green Lantern, I've been a Jedi, you know, and I've been part of these really, these cultural milestones. So, if I'd had only one of them, it might be easier to say, but knock on wood, I've, you know, been lucky enough to be part of a bunch of stuff that, you know, has significance that will outlast me.
When you look at all these characters, and obviously, like you said, in this context, there are so many fans, and there is such a big connection and a love and respect for this. To be a part of so many different pieces, like you said, Star Wars, to be a part of DC, to be a part of so many different worlds for people, does it give you more appreciation? Like you said, it'll outlast you, but your appreciation for it, what can you say to that? And knowing that you'll always be connected to something that will live on forever.
Well, I mean, I have to say, honestly, as a comic book guy, the thing that thrills me the most is being part of the comic book world. You know, bringing these heroes that I grew up reading about to life for in a new medium and for new generations. That is what counts the most for me.
Do you have a role that you have always wanted to play that you haven't gotten to yet?
No. I don't know. I don't know why that always strikes me as such a weird question. Because I feel like if I were a British actor, it's like, well, I've always wanted to play Macbeth. And, you know, but I don't know. For me, the best roles haven't been written yet.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. Although, I guess we're rapidly moving into a place where, like, Spider-Man is the new Hamlet. Like, so, when did you play Spider-Man? I played Spider-Man in 2006 for the Sony adaptation. But I love to say the role of Uncle Ben in the Marvel adaptation. You know, it's like, people are playing these roles so often now that it is sort of like Shakespeare.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, hey, let's get three Spider-Men together. Hey, there's six Batmen, you know? So, I don't know, maybe that in the future it'll be like that. But for me, I just love to take a role on its own. And honestly, I prefer to create a role rather than to take over one. Like some of the characters I played are, you know, like I play Aquaman in Young Justice and the Injustice video games. I don't consider that my role because other people, you know, voiced it before me. So I like the to originate stuff. You know. So yeah, in terms of roles I'd like to play, it's like whatever Genndy Tartakovsky comes up with next.
One of the roles, Mad TV, and being a part of that, being able to showcase your comedy, which obviously finds its way into each thing, but to be a part of Mad TV, just what you can say about the cast, the group that you got to work with, and what those relationships have meant to you in your career.
No, Mad TV, there were so many talented people who came through there. But no, I mean, an hour of sketch comedy is, it's hard. It's not, you know, digging ditches, unless the sketch is really bad. Then it feels like you're digging a ditch, and people are watching you dig a ditch, which is the only thing worse than digging a ditch for a living, is having somebody watch you go, oh, that's not good. But I have a lot of friends from that show that I'm still in touch with.
What is your most prominent memory of maybe going through one of those sketches, digging a ditch? Do you remember one that kind of stuck out to you where you felt like, this isn't going where we want it to go, we need to pull it back, we need to change it on the fly?
Well, the worst is when it's going the direction somebody else wants it to go and it's not the direction you want to go. It's like, really? I have to do this? Like, I'm the producer. That's what I want you to do. It's like, so, I mean, there weren't many of those. I'm trying to remember one that aired. But, yeah, every once in a while, you're stuck with a clunker because they need the minutes. The show has to be a certain number of minutes long. And not all of them. To me, sketch comedy is like baseball. If you get one out of three, you're batting 300. That's Hall of Fame numbers, you know?
Yeah.
And fortunately, most people don't remember the really bad stuff. They only remember the really good stuff. And they think you're a genius, even though you sucked two out of three times.
Before I let you go, when you look at kind of not only the youth of today, but people, you know, following their dreams, going after it, in the world we live in with social media, anybody can get to you. You know, there's a lot of bullying and different things that go on. So what can you say to people not only following their dreams, believing in themselves, but kind of blocking out the noise? As a comedian, you obviously know you have to block out that noise.
What do I think of the 21st century is what you're just asking me.
Pretty much. Where we're sitting right now, yeah.
I don't know. Well, to me, it cuts both ways. It's good and it's bad. It's good in the sense that you don't have to wait for somebody to hire you in order to perform. You don't have to have, you know, tens of thousands of dollars to make something watchable anymore.
Right.
And that's great. The entry point is low. Almost anybody can do it. The bad part is almost anybody can do it. And there's so much nonsense. And as a performer, the worst thing about that is you don't get that time to build your chops without anybody seeing it. Like, every crappy thing you did on your YouTube channel from 13 on is up there. And the worst thing to me is if you become a hit before you actually know what you're doing. Because then it's harder, it's even harder to get good. It's like, oh, well, people like me doing this. Like, yeah, but you could be so much more. Doesn't matter, I get 60,000 hits a week. And those people, a lot of those people, I feel, will never get the chance to be great, because good enough is good enough, you know, when you get enough hits.